There'll be more from the Ambridge Archives tonight at 7. And now our drama takes us back to London a few hundred years ago. It's an imaginative peep behind Hans Holbein's painting The Ambassadors, which is one of the star attractions in London's National Gallery. Jean de Danteville, one of the ambassadors, begins the story.
Holbein's Skull by Martin Wade.
Londres, 1533. Le mois de février. Et il fait
cold,
froid.
Wet and miserable.
Et miserable.
I'm in the Palace of Whitehall.
Je suis au Palais de Whitehall.
I'm on a diplomatic mission.
Ambassador!
My king, King Francis of France, is anxious about the political consequences which might result from King Henry's relationship with Anne Boleyn.
Ambassador!
Yes, greetings.
I've been counting the days, the hours. What a huge delight it is to feast upon your face again.
You're too kind.
I met this woman briefly on my visit to London last year. She thrust her affections at me and somehow decided that I was similarly attracted towards her.
How long can you stay this time? Months and months, I hope. Years, perhaps.
Years? No.
I've missed you terribly. And you never reply to my numerous tender and most affectionate letters.
Oh,
don't tell me they never reached you.
Very well, I won't.
You're a poor correspondent, sir, but you're honest at least, and I forgive you.
The woman's name is Marjorie Horseman. She combines her overbearingly amorous attitude with a somewhat ordinary physical appearance. Previously, she was lady-in-waiting to Queen Catherine, but in present times, she attends upon the Boleyn woman, who is queen, it seems, in all but name.
You have an appointment with His Majesty this afternoon.
I do, upon the hour. Very, very soon, in fact.
Matters of more personal interest we shall postpone till another occasion.
Yes, that is...
But now, before you see the King, I shall offer you a brief word about the situation here. Let me be thoroughly, comprehensively, indispensable to you. His Majesty has married Anne Boleyn in secret. Actually, it's not that much of a secret. Everyone at court seems to know. But since it's still meant to be a secret, I wouldn't refer to it in your meeting.
I'll try hard not to. You're French now, by the way. Very fluent.
Oh, thank you. Another thing you shouldn't mention yet. The new wife hasn't been feeling terribly well recently. In the mornings. And she's developed a furious hankering for apples. It will be a boy. The astrologers say so.
Oh, heavens. Time I was off.
Yes. I trust that what I've confided to you will be of immeasurable use.
I'm sure it will. Thank you.
Francis, your king would like, I suppose, to urge King Henry, through your services, not to act in any way precipitate. Not to rush into invalidating the present queen, Queen Catherine, and proclaiming a new one.
Yes, well then.
Though between ourselves, Ambassador, how can King Henry avoid a desire to hurry the great matter along, given his current state of bigamy? Your king, it seems to me, is in a difficult position. He wishes to remain an ally both of Henry and of the Pope, but he knows that the Pope is reluctant to give approval to Henry's actions. To achieve any success, Ambassador, you'll have to employ all your diplomatic skills.
You're right. I ought to be prompt, at the very least. Nice to see you again.
It's been a thrill, and there's so much more to look forward to. You're residing at Bridewell, I assume.
Yes.
I'll call on you at the earliest available opportunity. Until then, give me your hand. Goodbye.
I break free at last and hurry to the audience chamber. I'm late. I grovel my apology. King Henry makes his position clear. Anne Boleyn will be his queen very soon. And King Francis of France should give his support to this welcome development. I forget the lines that I've rehearsed, and in my eagerness to avoid references to bigamy and babies, I improvise most ineptly on the theme of caution and restraint.
Yes, enough. We thank you. We are, however, quite unmoved.
The meeting quickly ends. Shamefaced, I return to my apartment.
Oh, failure. Diplomacy at its worst. I'm no use in the ambassadorial line, nor to be truthful in any line at all. Utterly hopeless, lacking in moral fibre. With Mistress Marjorie, for instance, I was exceedingly feeble. I ought to have made it quite clear, to save disappointment on her part and annoyance on mine, that she doesn't mean a thing to me, and that whatever she supposes took place when we met briefly last year, she must have invented it. As it is, I permit her to take my polite smile at considerably more than face value. I encourage her to believe that my sole reason for accepting this unfortunate diplomatic mission is to indulge in intimate relations with her.
Gloom. Rain. On and on. I feel the damp in my bones already. The chill. England ought to be closed down. It isn't fit for human habitation. If only my friend Georges de Selve were here. We could complain about the rain together. A trouble shared, they say.
Mistress Marjorie stands bedraggled beneath the window.
Yes?
I called on you, as I promised I would, at the earliest opportunity, but was told at the door 3 times that you were out. Shocking weather, is it not?
Shocking.
May I come in?
She is admitted. She's extremely keen to get out of her wet things, but is eventually persuaded to remain soaked and decent.
Coming here unaccompanied, you must surely risk some damage to your reputation.
No doubt, but I don't care. Tell me, Ambassador, how went your appointment with the King?
I revealed no secrets.
When will you meet him again?
Weekends.
In the meantime, you must find ways to occupy the empty hours. Listen, tomorrow I'll take the whole day off.
Oh, that's very kind of you.
We'll do whatever you like. Stay indoors and play games. Go sightseeing?
Yeah.
Shopping? Oh, have you thought about getting your portrait done?
No.
You should. Something to take back to your chateau and impress everybody. Hans Holbein. He's your man. You're familiar, are you, with his work?
Holbein? Oh, yes, certainly.
Marvellous eye for detail.
He's a consummate artist.
At his peak.
The very topmost. Expensive, I imagine.
Yes. Think of the prestige.
Oh, it would be an awful indulgence. Oh,
absolutely. Treat yourself. You deserve it.
She convinces me that I should see the consummate artist. Ever eager to place me in her debt, she arranges an interview with him and accompanies me to his studio. Master Holbein, I discover, is someone with whom it's far from easy to negotiate.
Sit! If I may, Master Holbein.
Sit!
Yeah, thank you. If I may...
The ambassador is anxious to know...
Before we progress any further...
Exactly how much will it cost? For something, say, this high and this wide? Head and shoulders.
I'll tell you. But I have questions also to help me, Herr Ambassador, build up your personality profile. For the painting of the picture. By the way, this high by this wide, too small.
Oh.
And I like they stop, not head and shoulders. But in your case, Herr Ambassador, so as to do justice to your fine figure, what would you think about full length?
Full length? Not sure. Is that question one?
No. This is question one. Are you interested in astronomical and horological instruments?
Well...
Answer, please.
They have their uses.
Then say yes.
Yes.
Wunderbar. Question two. Do you play the lute and the flute?
I was taught the recorder when I was small.
Good enough. Question three. Does death interest you greatly?
I try not to let it.
Brave man.
Question four. What is your motto?
My motto?
Given your evident obsession with the end of things, we'll say it's memento mori. Any objection?
It's hardly original.
Nor is death. Very well. What I propose is as follows. The portrait, as agreed, shall be full length.
Forgive me, but...
And it shall be 6 feet 9.5 inches high and 6 feet 10.5 inches wide.
6 feet 9.
Said picture shall present you as a man of learning and accomplishment, and shall include a celestial globe, a polyhedral sundial, and other scientific instruments, and a lute, and a case of flutes.
Master Holbein.
Also, taking account of your motto, a skull to remind you, should it be necessary, of the transience of things. The skull to sit in a prominent position in the foreground of the painting on a patterned floor very similar to the marble paving in the sanctuary of Westminster Abbey. The difficulty entailed in presenting such an elaborate pattern in the floor's perspective will afford a magnificent opportunity for me to display my painterly skills, as, of course, will the depiction of the various scientific and musical objects and the skull.
May I speak?
If you wish.
To avoid any confusion, Master Holbein, what I'm looking for...
The ambassador wants something relatively simple.
And also...
significantly smaller than almost 7 feet square.
And not too...
expensive.
And I was rather thinking that it should be a memento of me, not a memento mori. What if I were to suggest, insist on, in fact, a head and shoulders portrait without celestial globe, polyhedral sundial, lute and flutes, and most especially, without the skull?
If you did suggest it, Herr Ambassador, such a picture would be considerably less interesting than what I envisage, and it would never be painted, not by me. Your choice, take it or leave it.
I won't be bullied.
Quite right.
A straightforward head and shoulders job or nothing. Of course, I wasn't sure I wanted to be painted in the first place. You rather talked me into it. Played on my pride. Master Holbein is a consummate artist. We can all agree on that.
And he hopes to become painted to the king. So he's keen to show off his prodigious talent.
Precisely. One ought to display one's prodigious talent if one's blessed that way. But the fact is...
he's rather too German.
Insufficiently prepared, one might say, to be accommodating. He's quite wrong. I'm not a man of learning and accomplishment. Nor, if I can help it, do I want to brood on death. Death's like life. It's no joke.
Days pass. To ward off Mistress Marjorie for a while, I tell her that I'm feeling poorly.
Ambassador!
Forgive me, Mistress Marjorie, but you can't come up.
Why? What's happened?
Oh, I'm not well. It's Tertian fever, I believe.
I stay in my apartment. In time, I persuade myself that I'm not well. Tertian fever, most likely.
Also, I'm in a moping mood. I'm very tired.
Thanks to Holbein and his skull, I've had one of my stay-awake-all-night-thinking-that-death-isn't-fair sessions.
I need help. I need the presence of someone sympathetic and agreeable. I need Georges de Selve, Bishop-elect of Lavour. I'll write to him. Yes, my dear friend, I'll say. Rain, damp, tertian fever, morbid thoughts. Wish you were here.
I write the letter.
Dear Bishop-elect.
I make no mention of weather conditions, infirmity or melancholia. I suggest to de Selve that if he were to join me very soon, he'd be of great help in my diplomatic mission. There are, I tell him, religious as well as political issues which should be put to King Henry, and he, de Selve, might offer invaluable service as a sort of auxiliary ambassador.
Yours pleadingly, etc. There, that should do it.
3 days later...
Mon cher de Selve!
Mon cher de Venteville!
Pleasant trip?
Nasty weather, but... it's brightened up now.
Yes. Yes, it has.
Ah, very nice.
Oui, c'est très bien ici.
I'm just along the corridor, but you'll be happy here, j'espère.
One always tries to be happy.
And one fails so often.
Tell me, Danteville, what have you planned? What is it you hope from me?
Well, companionship, brotherly feelings, some short-term relief from loneliness and misery. However, I keep such thoughts to myself.
The situation's very difficult. I've spoken with King Henry, but made no impression. He's married the Boleyn woman. He did it in secret.
Yes, I know.
He wants the marriage to Queen Catherine to be annulled, and his new wife, who is going to have a baby...
Yes, I know.
Henry wants this new wife crowned queen.
Yes.
So the hopes that King Francis nurtured of maintaining an alliance with England while keeping on good terms with the Pope, well, they look slim.
But Henry, even at this late hour, might be open to arguments on religious and ecclesiastical grounds.
Precisely.
He might be persuaded against taking any overt, hasty, drastic action that would infuriate His Holiness. Moderation is required. Discretion. Bon, voyons.
On the day of my next appointment with King Henry, Bishop-elect de Selve accompanies me to Whitehall.
Eh bien, what's the form? Shall we go in together?
We shall. I'll introduce you, list your credentials. He'll be impressed.
He knows his Bible, I'm told.
He does. You and he will get along famously.
The line I thought I'd take is that, though I belong to the Catholic Church, I have considerable sympathy with King Henry for being critical of Rome.
Good.
Myself, I see much in the Church that requires reform, particularly in respect of the covetousness of its priests. Their ambition, corruptibility and thieving, they're irreligiosity.
Good.
I'm not surprised, I'll tell him, that there have been dissensions and divisions, heresies and schisms and Martin Lutherisms and so on. The fault, however, lies not with the church itself, but with its practitioners.
Good.
What does the one true universal church mean? It means the one true universal church. And Henry, as defender of the faith, should think very carefully before leaving it.
Excellent, excellent. Ready?
We present ourselves at the door of the audience chamber. Oh, the shame, the shame. Bishop-elect Selv is refused admission. I've ignored diplomatic protocol. I've neglected to inform the king in advance. I've informed no one, in truth, least of all the guards at the door, that I wished the bishop-elect to join me as my fellow ambassador. Without the Selv, I'm quite unprepared. My attempt at conversation with King Henry stumbles into disaster. And he begins to raise his voice at me in a most unpleasant fashion.
Let your king abandon us! Let the Pope threaten us with excommunication! We are resolved!
When I emerge from the chamber, the Selv is gone. But Mistress Marjorie, of course, is lying in wait.
Ambassador, you seem out of sorts. Did the meeting not go well?
Not very well.
Or if you wish to talk about it, unburden yourself.
I don't. Thank you all the same.
By the way, who is the gentleman I glimpsed you with earlier?
He's a bishop.
A bishop?
Well, nearly a bishop. Too young to take office, so he dresses in civvies.
Is he a friend?
Probably not. Not now. Will you excuse me? I have an abject apology to make.
My dear fellow, please.
What a fool I am. What a fool.
It's not important.
But you came over to England specially, and at short notice. And you thought very carefully about what to tell the king.
Danteville, don't distress yourself. What's happened doesn't matter. I'm delighted to be here.
Really?
Really.
Well, I'm really delighted too. I've been really delighted ever since you agreed to join me. Which perhaps goes some way to explaining, though not condoning, my bureaucratic bungle. You made me forget my responsibilities. So, you're not planning to go back tomorrow?
No, nor the day after.
I can't promise that the king will want to see you.
Don't mind. Truly, I don't.
He smiles. He looks at me with his engaging brown eyes. I smile back.
I've neglected to tell you, I've been planning to have my portrait painted.
Oh, yes?
By Hans Holbein.
Hans Holbein?
Consummate artist.
There's none better.
Very German, unfortunately. It's been hard, I've found, to get things into his rather thick skull. Complications have arisen, points of difference, a clash of cultures, in part. But also, I began to tell myself, Danteville, this is nothing, surely, but a vanity project.
A vanity project? Nonsense. The picture wouldn't be for you alone. It'd be treasured by your family and your friends, me included. A great gift to posterity when you've departed this world.
When I've departed this world? Oui. On the same principle, though, Master Holbein should paint your portrait, too.
Mine? Can't afford it.
I'll pay.
Ah, no, no. I wouldn't let you. Besides, I doubt if you can afford it either.
He's right. I can't. But I've already decided to request funding from King Francis so as to cover expenses incurred by the Boleyn woman's forthcoming coronation. Why not inflate the costs in order to help pay for a couple of Holbeins? I inform the bishop-elect of this scheme and find him gratifyingly unperturbed by its naughtiness.
I think it's a splendid idea. Let's visit Master Holbein.
As we make our way to Master Holbein's studio, I mention the paraphernalia that the consummate artist is anxious to include in my portrait.
A sundial and other scientific instruments, and a lute, and a case of flutes. Also a skull at my feet.
At your feet?
Ah, oui. Forgot to mention, he wants to go full length.
Is that necessary?
No, it's not. Not at all. We'll be firm with him, and forthright. A couple of head and shoulders portraits, please, Master Holbein. And without the still life.
Question three.
Master Holbein.
Which institution promotes the true gospel of Christ?
Master Holbein.
Is it A, popishness, or B...
We want to make it clear.
A church which is founded on the principles laid down by Martin Luther.
No clutter in either portrait.
Answer the question.
And especially no skull.
Is it A or B?
Well, my view is this. There is one true faith, yeah, that which was delivered unto the saints. Quod semper, quod ubique, quod ab omnibus creditum est.
Yeah.
What requires reformation is not the doctrine proclaimed by the Catholic Church, but the conduct of her practitioners.
You have opted for A, popishness, viz. Qualifications. So, in your portrait, Herr Bishop-elect, I propose to paint a crucifix in the top left-hand corner. A very small cross with a very small Jesus attached,
peeping out from behind a curtain.
No.
But also to signify your open-mindedness and potential willingness to participate in interdenominational dialogue, you'll be shown in close proximity to a Lutheran hymn book.
No.
A very small Lutheran hymn book. What do you say? Also, a skull.
No.
No skull, no Lutheran hymn book, no crucifix.
And no skull for me, thank you. No clutter, no skull. We're being firm with you.
But I'm rather keen on the skull. I want the skull. In the midst of life, gentlemen, we are in death. When Adam and Eve were in the garden, death was present also. Death does his dance with ploughmen and peddlers, with kings and queens, merchants and monks, popes and bishops elect, and ambassadors.
Yes, yes.
Death...
You're absolutely right, of course.
Nevertheless, no skull.
A very, very small one, Herr Ambassador. On a badge, on your cap, which will be worn at a jaunty angle.
No. Take it or leave it.
Here's an idea. I paint the two of you, head and shoulders only. But when one looks at each picture from the front, all is distortion. Nothing is understood. Go to one side, however, and hey presto, the image becomes clear. The technical term for this effect is anamorphosis.
Yes, but why?
It's Greek.
I mean, why would we want to do such a thing?
Why choose to view a portrait side on?
So you can admire it. Regard it as a work of great skill and ingenuity. Yes?
No. No.
To sum up, one portrait of you, Herr Bishop-elect, one portrait of you, Herr Ambassador.
Each to be viewed from the front.
Correct. Each to be full length.
No.
It was agreed, was it not?
No. It was not agreed. The cost will be prohibitive.
Very well. A compromise. A full-length portraits, but without any accompanying objects. Even Herr Ambassador, without a very, very small skull on a badge attached to a jaunty cap on your head.
No, we don't want full-length portraits.
I feel a strong desire to paint them, though. God in heaven, what is wrong with you people? No, no, no to every suggestion. This would be interesting. No, this would look artistic. No, 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 no. It's the constant refrain.
We're sorry.
Yes, sorry.
Time wasters! Freaking French Philistines!
We'll wish you goodbye, then.
Yes.
Goodbye.
Your final offer?
Well?
A double portrait. One painting, but with two likenesses. Full length. No clutter. No skull, alas. What do you say?
What do we say?
We say...
Yes!
Happiness and handshakes all round. When I'm next attained by Mistress Marjorie, she's quick to interrogate me.
A double portrait?
Full length.
You and the bishop-elect?
Just so. We very much like the idea. Yeah, with it being the two of us together, it smacks rather less of the vanitas vanitatum and so forth. I'll keep the painting, since I'm paying for it, but the bishop-elect will be able to see it whenever he wants. Often, I hope.
Ambassador?
We've been choosing what to wear in the picture. For the bishop-elect, a gown that's sober but not inexpensive. Damask, brocade. I'll be in what I've bought for the coronation. So pink satin doublet, black surcoat lined with ermine, colossal shoulder puffs. Master Holbein approves.
Oh, good.
Ambassador. You'll be pleased to know that all in all, despite the difficulties in diplomacy, life seems somewhat sunnier. Farewell for now, the dumps and dismals.
Ambassador.
Mistress Marjorie.
May I offer some advice as someone who is rather more than a dear friend? This portrait, this double portrait... Consider the implications. Imagine what those who look at the picture, colleagues, family, people of note, will think of it.
Sorry, don't quite understand.
You, a fine, handsome young man, good physique, well turned out.
Oh, please, you hyperbolise.
Alongside you, another young man, in no way as striking in appearance as yourself.
Oh.
But not, some will say, unprepossessing.
No, no, indeed.
Now, Ambassador... My knowledge of the conventions of imagery employed in works of art is quite limited. I claim no expertise. But common sense tells me that when a likeness is made of two people in the same picture, the beholder is bound to assume some relationship between them. Father and son, or
yes.
Brother and sister.
Yes.
Man and wife. Bedfellows.
Yes. Yes.
Do you see what I mean?
I hurry back to Bridewell Palace and convey to the bishop-elect something of what Mistress Margery has hinted.
You see what I mean? People might construe that the portrait's making a statement about our feelings for each other.
Of course, we do have feelings for each other.
Of course.
There's a deep regard between us, bordering on fraternal affection.
But
it doesn't go beyond that.
Precisely. The idea that we should be represented in the same picture...
That was Master Holbein's, not ours.
Well, we liked the notion because it seemed to sever the Gordian knot. Kept Master Holbein reasonably happy and wasn't too damaging financially, that's all.
So...
What's the appropriate next step?
We could just say we don't give a fig for public opinion. We refuse to be intimidated by prejudice and bigotry, especially when what's aroused such prejudice and bigotry doesn't apply to us anyway.
We're friends, just friends.
We've been just friends for some years.
We're proud of our association with each other. We're like Roland and Oliver.
David and Jonathan.
Harmodius and the other fellow.
Aristogiton. They were lovers, in fact.
Well, they were friends first, perhaps.
Friends first? Yes.
Yes.
On the other hand...
Precisely.
We each have a career.
And we have our reputations.
If we were to be deprived of these...
What would we be left with?
Well, each other.
True, which would be a great comfort to us.
But even so...
That night, separately, we sleep on it. The following morning, we come to an agreement.
In my view...
On balance.
Marvellous as the prospect of a double portrait assuredly is...
The attendant risks...
On balance...
They're too great.
We'll cancel the order. Are we so resolved?
We are.
It's a shame.
It's too bad.
Nevertheless.
That's right.
We congratulate ourselves on our brave decision.
Wasn't easy.
We're disappointed. We're relieved. But within the half hour...
Greetings, gentlemen!
Oh, greetings.
Greetings. Did we arrange an appointment?
I'm ready. I have sketchbook. I have pencil. Vivate. You first, Herr Ambassador?
Actually...
Very well. The bishop-elect it is. You may be seated, Herr bishop-elect. I'm drawing your face only.
Actually...
Sit.
We decided...
Quiet. Herr bishop-elect.
Yes?
While I draw, you may sink religious swords, if you wish.
Oh.
Try... And persuade yourself, for instance, that transubstantiation is nothing but a convenient metaphor. That during Holy Communion, God's body manifests itself in a spiritual and mystical sense, and not as a flesh and blood of corporeal substance. I take it, Herr Bishop-elect, that you wish to keep the beard and the rather sour expression? Good.
The plan we had to inform Master Holbein that we no longer require his services disappears in front of our eyes.
Das ist sehr gut.
He completes the drawing in quick time.
There, done.
We're all delighted with it.
Excellent.
Yeah, I think so too.
He orders in a beer and a plate of bratwurst.
Danke schön. Herr Ambassador.
Your turn, Danteville.
I sit. I pose. My intention is to appear confident and rather pleased with myself, on account of some improbable achievement in the diplomatic field.
Are you smiling a smile?
In a way. Call it a little twinkle around the lips.
Or a sly smirk.
He completes the drawing. We're all delighted with it.
Das was.
He leaves.
Auf Wiedersehen!
Impressive, isn't he?
Consummate artist. Very German, though.
Once it's finished, we could hide it, I suppose. Put it in perpetual storage. We'd take a look at it from time to time on special occasions, anniversaries and so on.
Such a pity, though. A Holbein of us. But with only us to see it on special occasions.
Word would spread, you know. Salacious curiosity is bound to be aroused.
What dreadful secret, people will ask, does the picture contain? What indecency, what grossness.
It'd be worse off than if we put it on general exhibition. What if, just a thought.
Go ahead.
What if we let Master Holbein have his way after all, regarding the still life assemblage? What if we permit him to cram the picture with the celestial globe, polyhedral sundial, lute, flutes, and a multitude of other items, excluding the skull, objects to distract the eye? confuse the issue.
Not that there is an issue.
Encourage debate on matters other than the nature of the relationship between Ambassador Jean de Dinteville and Bishop-elect Georges de Selve. It might work.
It might. And think how delighted Master Holbein will be.
You want the celestial globe and the polyhedral sundial?
Yes, please.
Along with as many astronomical, horological and other scientific instruments as you can fit in, without inviting ridicule.
Also, we want the lute.
And the flutes?
And the flutes. Oh. And the Lutheran hymn book. And the crucifix peeping out from behind the curtain.
Yeah. And the skull?
No, not the skull.
Yeah, in the foreground somewhere. Oh. And the very, very small one, Ambassador, on a badge attached to your jaunty cap.
The small one I'll permit, but not the skull in the foreground.
Not the skull in the foreground?
Oh, if you don't mind. As much as the other stuff, though, as you care to include.
And perhaps, Master Holbein, you could also introduce one or two, or more, talking points. Provocative, enigmatic elements.
Good ideas. Some annoyingly mystifying details which seem to demand interpretation.
Symbols.
Codes.
Devices.
Illusions.
Suggestions of obscure iconography and significances to puzzle the onlooker.
Obscure iconography and significances! I like this. Yeah, wunderbar.
The following day, on my way back from a brief meeting with the king, the best feature of which is that I'm not shouted at, I pay a call on Mistress Marjorie.
Ambassador, what a delight.
My purpose is to advise her of the most recent developments with the portrait and to thank her for her wise words of warning.
It's a more complex assignment now, of course, and consequently more expensive, but it'll be worth every penny.
Oh, good.
I'm so, so grateful. How shall I ever repay you?
Make a suggestion.
I could send you some flowers.
Yes.
And if we had an official unveiling of the picture, I could arrange an invitation for you.
Yes. Nothing more?
My dear Mistress Marjorie, let me be unambiguous. You're very kind, and you're very sweet.
And?
And your face is attractive. Your body has pleasing proportions.
Go on.
Many men, I'm sure, have fallen for your charms.
Many? No, in truth.
But I have to inform you, though.
There's been one or two, three at the most, but what use are they? It's you I desire.
Well.
Hold me.
Well, and I wouldn't want to.
Do it.
Oh, I wouldn't want.
Tighter?
In any way.
Oh, let me feel the hot breath from your nostrils.
I wouldn't want to practice a deception on you.
Kiss me. Yeah. No, kiss me. Oh. Importunately, kiss me. Impolitely, pleasure me.
Excuse me, please. Appointment.
Wait. I managed to make my excuses and escape Mistress Marjorie's vigorous clutches. The following day, de Selve and I visit Master Holbein's studio and are shown a sketch of the planned portrait.
Celestial globe? Cylindrical dial? Universal equinoctial dial in two parts? Quadrant with straight hour lines, also known as a horarium bilimbatum.
Excellent.
Marvellous.
Polyhedral dial with hour lines on three visible faces.
Excellent.
And a torquatum.
Marvellous.
On the shelf below, terrestrial globe, a book of arithmetical instruction, this set square, lute, pair of compasses, Lutheran hymn book, case of flutes.
Excellent.
Marvellous. Splendidly diverting.
As for enigmas and talking points and so on, I give the lute a broken string. See?
Oh, yes.
We ask, as we look at the lute and notice the broken string, why is this string broken? What does it mean? Is it perchance a comment on the current European situation? Does it symbolize the breaking down of political harmony?
Marvelous.
Also, the flute case. Observe. One flute is missing, huh? We want to know why is one flute missing?
It's a reference, some might think, to current religious affairs. Yeah. Contention, dissension, sedition, division, the church disunited.
Yeah.
A constituent part has absented itself. A glaring space remains.
Convincing, yeah? But then again, we can't be certain. Sometimes a missing flute is just a missing flute.
Oh, indeed. What perplexity, what mystery. Altogether, very well done, Master Holbein.
Wunderbar!
Agreed. You want more enigma still?
Oh, by all means, more enigma, more talking point.
I'm your man.
As we leave the studio, the Bishop-elect's face and the weather cloud over.
Jean.
Yes?
May I call you Jean?
I'd be so pleased if you did. And I shall call you Georges.
So pleased. Jean.
Yes, Georges.
It suddenly occurred to me. Here we are, taking elaborate precautions with regard to a painting, which will be marvellous, by the way, and worth all the trouble. But what about real life?
What about real life?
You and me, in London.
Yes?
Dwelling under the same roof,
Oh, it's a very big roof.
You and me, Jean, together. And me, supposedly, in an ambassadorial role, but never seeing the king, enjoying your company instead. And I'm a bishop-elect, don't forget. Jean, I'm afraid it's got to stop.
You mean you intend to leave me, go back home?
A sensible measure, lest malicious tongues start wagging. I'm sorry.
And so am I. But don't go very soon. Please, not tomorrow.
A drab, dull Monday morning. The day after tomorrow.
6 o'clock, George. You asked me to give you a call.
Oh, oui. Oh, much obliged. How did you sleep?
Badly. May I sit on the edge of your bed? Oh,
please.
Well, I'm distraught you're going.
Well, I see.
I can't predict when I'll be back in France. Not before the royal birth and the christening, which will be months away. It doesn't bear contemplation.
No. We could write to each other, of course.
Yes. How often?
Every other day.
Every other day. Oui. And with regard to the painting, as soon as it's finished, I'll have it brought round here, and because of Master Holbein's clutter and enigmas, no one who sees it will think any inappropriate thoughts or make insinuations. And when I'm alone, I shall gaze upon your likeness, and it will give me great pleasure. Georges.
Yes, Jean?
About the advice that Mistress Marjorie gave.
Yes.
I've begun to wonder.
Yes, I've been wondering too.
What if we didn't simply seem to be rather more than dear, dear friends?
But we really were.
What if you and I...
Is it possible?
Oh, George.
Oh, Jean.
Let me admit the truth. The real and pressing reason for inviting you here. It had nothing to do with my ambassadorial mission. I wanted you to be with me. I needed you.
You called, I came.
You came. Oh, Georges. I can hardly believe it. But you don't want me. Surely I'm a failure.
Nonsense.
I am. I'm entirely bereft of diplomatic skills.
Doesn't matter.
I'm useless. I'm here under false pretenses.
I don't care.
I'm a fraud. I'm a charlatan.
Oh, dearest Jean, if you are, so am I. Despite being a bishop-elect, despite exuding the odour of sanctity at the appropriate times, despite possessing very firm views on ecclesiastical issues, papal primacy, reform and so on, and being quite capable of working up as much odium theologicum as the next man, despite all this, I'm an unbeliever. My view is, if there is a God, he's opted for divine non-intervention, gone into retirement and left us to our own devices. But people like to have something to believe in, even if it's a superannuated deity, so they need a bishop to encourage them, and who knows? By the time I'm properly Episcopal, vestments and crozier and whatnot, I might have experienced a conversion. I hope I've not shocked you.
Not a jot. I call myself a liberal humanist, rationalist, free thinker. I'm very open to radical concepts.
At the river's edge, we bid each other farewell, as discreetly as we can.
This is my barge.
I do love you so very much.
I love you. With all my heart and soul.
I can't wait until we're together again.
Nor me.
Though, I suppose, given the prevailing climate of the times.
No, we can't be too bold. Full disclosure is out of the question.
We'll do visits.
Carefully arranged brief encounters.
Unsatisfactory, we'll tell ourselves, but better than nothing. And we'll write to each other, as agreed.
Every other day.
Who'll write tomorrow?
I will. So, it's time.
I feel the touch of his hand on my shoulder.
Farewell, Ambassador.
Farewell, Bishop-elect.
He steps into the barge.
Adieu, or rather, au revoir!
Gloom, alternating with comforting thoughts of frequent correspondence. Drizzle and intermittent sunshine. Time drags its leaden feet. I attend the Berlin woman's coronation. 3 months later, a royal brat is born. The astrologers are wrong. It's a disappointing girl. I attend the christening. Not long after, Master Holbein sends me a note in very large Gothic writing to announce triumphantly that the picture is finished and to invite me to have a look. Out of politeness, I take Mistress Marjorie with me to the studio. The painting is hidden by a velvet drape.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Astonish me.
In my excitement, I almost grab hold of Mistress Marjorie's hand. Master Holbein pulls aside the velvet drape. He astonishes me. He astonishes Mistress Margery.
Good Lord!
It's...
Well?
Extraordinary.
Yeah, you're right.
The portraits themselves...
are superb, are they not?
There's such detail. So much for the eye to take in.
Extraordinary.
I agree with you.
In the foreground, one can't help noticing...
Yes, that curious, squashed, elongated blob.
Yeah, the curious, squashed, elongated blob.
Oh, I know what it is.
Let me show you how to make sense of this curious, squashed, elongated blob.
It's a...
Quiet, Herr Ambassador. You are trying to spoil the fun. Mistress Margery, take a step or two to the right, if you will. You see where I have marked an X upon the floor?
Yes.
Stand there, if you please. For future reference, Herr Ambassador, the optimum position for viewing the blob is 2 feet, 7 inches from the right-hand side of the picture and 4.5 inches at an angle of 90 degrees away from the wall on which the picture is hung. Bend a little at the knees, Mistress Margery. Eye level, Herr Ambassador, should be 3 feet, 5 inches from the bottom of the picture.
Oh, it's a skull!
Yes, Mistress Margery, it's a skull.
And for a skull, very lifelike too.
You couldn't resist, could you, Master Holbein? You had to have your own way.
It's a talking point. You ask for a talking point, I give you one. A great big one.
It's very clever. Very clever.
I agree. An anamorphic triumph, offering a sideways look at death. Herr Ambassador, this is your own special memento mori.
A week or two later, my duties in London are deemed, at last, to be at an end, and I'm given permission to depart. I feel obliged to call on Mistress Margery and bid her farewell.
I'm sorry your mission has met with no success.
Well, so am I. On the bright side, however, I received a visit from my dear, dear friend.
And, at my suggestion, you had your portrait painted.
Along with my dear, dear friend.
Yes. The picture, I believe, has caused quite a stir.
It most certainly has. And for the most proper of reasons, such puzzlement and befuddlement, such intense speculation, so many muddling attempts to demystify. But as a painting, an artistic endeavour, in my opinion, has failed.
Failed?
The curious, squashed, elongated blob. It spoils the whole thing. I mean, how is one supposed to manage? If one stands directly in front of the picture, one's annoyed by the excrescence that's hovering in the foreground. If one stands to the side, on the appointed spot, and sees that the excrescence is a skull, it's hard to make out very much else. It's a painting that only works if one can be in two places at the same time. Besides, who wants to look at a picture sideways on simply to be reminded of mortality?
Despite the blob, though, you'll take the picture back with you? Hang it on a wall in your chateau?
Oh, yes. And when it's there, I'll view it straight ahead. Try to see beyond the blob.
Master Holbein's managed your likeness splendidly. A beautiful rendition.
As is that of my dear, dear friend, the Bishop-elect.
I should give up hoping, shouldn't I?
You're very kind and very sweet.
Yes, I know. I should never have hoped at all.
I'm sorry.
A man has to be what he is and so forth.
Yes, but not too overtly. Not till the public attitude grows more favourable.
I won't breathe a word. Your secret's safe, I promise. But tell me, Ambassador, do you suppose that you might have loved me, all other things being equal?
Oh, yes. Oh,
you would?
Absolutely. I'm sure of it.
Thank you. Spoken like a true diplomat.
In Holbein's Skull by Martin Wade, Jean de Danteville was played by Jack Farthing, Georges de Selve by Sam Alexander, and Margery Horseman by Lauren Cornelius. Hans Holbein and King Henry were played by Clive Hayward. The director was Tracy Neal.